mother and father were married in 1913, and they lived in St. John until 1917, when they bought a house at the very end of Maiden Lane in Rossay. And at that time, I think that my father had electric wiring put in before they moved in. And they already had, my older sister Marjorie and my brother Tim had been born. I was the first one to be born in that house, which they called, most of the houses, a lot of the houses in Rossay had names, and mother and dad called that house The Mole, which was the name of an ancestor of ours that had a house called The Mole up in Sussex. Anyway, it was always referred to in our family as The Mole. And there were no close neighbors. The closest one was an old farmer by the name of Mr. Goldie. He and his wife lived on a farm just down the lane a bit, and he was quite an old character. I can remember my mother telling about being very patriotic during World War I. They decided to raise a pig and use it to supply meat. And my father said that by the time they fed this pig till it got big enough to be killed, and that he paid Dave Goldie a bottle of whiskey to come up and slaughter this pig, that it really cost them this is very expensive pork by the time they get finished with this pig. My brother, the brother next to me was Fan, who was born on Christmas Day, as a matter of fact, in 1919, and he was a great favorite of Mr. and Mrs. Goldie, only they used to call him Trouble, because he would wander down from our house and try to cross the field to get to Mr. Goldie's. Mrs. Goldie always had peppermints in those little hard white peppermints. I think that might have been one of the attractions for a friend to go down to see Mr. Goldie, but he would periodically get stuck in a snowdrift and Mr. Goldie would have to come and haul him out. But he had pigs, and that was a great attraction for us to go down and watch these pigs. And he collected garbage around the village, and he used to just throw it in the backyard for his hens to root around in. And he had a horse. Tim, my brother Tim, could tell you more about Mr. Goldie's horse that he was very attached to. And in later years, Mr. Goldie, I think his mind kind of went on him. His wife died, and then his horse died, and he couldn't see any reason for living, apparently, and he hanged himself on a tree right out in the backyard. And by that time, I was getting to be a teenager and going out in the evenings, and no boys would ever walk home with us. It was pitch dark coming up the lane. There were no street lights, and so nobody ever would walk home with us. We were always destined to walk home alone. And the one thing that sticks out in my mind about Maiden Lane was in the spring, it was mud. Absolute mud, right up to your ankles. There was no, we couldn't even ride our bicycles down the road. It was so bad. And the dad couldn't bring the car up to the house. We had to leave it down until the frost came out of the ground and it dried up. But mud, I always associated with spring, and it was such a change for me when I went to Montreal after I finished school to find a spring up there. There was no mud. It was all pavement. But there were, the Brock family lived down the road, and there always seemed to be a Brock and an Ellis that were the same age. And we used to get together in the evenings and play kick the can and red line, which I think really was supposed to be called red light, somebody told me, but we always called it red line anyway. And we made our own amusements. We played a game at our house, but I had never heard anyone else playing. And it was, and I don't know who invented it. We called it Haley Over. We had a woodshed that was at the back of the house, and the roof was not terribly high. But we would team up, had two teams, and be on one side of this woodshed, and you would take a ball and you would hurl it over the woodshed roof and yell Haley Over, and if the other side were able to catch the ball, they raced around to try and tag you. In the meantime, you ran around the house in the other direction to try to get around on their side. And if they didn't catch the ball, well, they threw it back. We used to play that by the hour, and my mother used to get so annoyed at us because we raced through her flower beds. But we were not allowed to do anything like that on Sunday. My mother always would say, you've got to be quiet, it's Sunday. And we were not allowed to play cards on Sunday. We had no television, of course, and no radio in those days, and we played cards a lot. And my mother had come from Montreal, and she went up there periodically to visit her parents, she came home one day with this game called Mahjong, and it was a Chinese game, and it was a rather complicated game, but we played that in the evenings by the hour, and we read a lot, and we played a lot of card games, we played a game called, we call it Casino, but I think it was Casino, probably, but we had our own names for these things. And in the wintertime, we would go down to the rink after school and skate. And in the summertime, we used to play. There was a vacant lot between the Mackay's house and the Sayers house, and a bunch of us would congregate there and play Scrub, which I have never seen kids play Scrub since, and nobody seems to know what you're talking about when you say you played Scrub. But it was a good game of baseball, but there were no teams. You numbered off, and whoever was number one was the batter, number two was the catcher, number three was the pitcher, and so on, first base, second base, third base. And as the batter was struck out, you moved up one. So you played every base, and you pitched, and you catched, and you caught, and everybody had a turn doing things. And it was a terrific game. It was a great game. We had fights, too, you know. And the boys used to play with us. I used to pick wildflowers and violets in the springtime. We'd go down by the brook, Taylor's Brook, and pick bunches of wildflowers. It always amuses me now that children have tennis lessons, and they have golf lessons, and they have swimming lessons, and all kinds of lessons. We didn't have all those kinds of lessons. The only lessons that we had were dancing lessons, which nobody has today. But we had to learn to dance.
From Marge Jackson,
from Marge Peters, yes. And Catherine K. Blanchett. Hello. Helen Blanchett.
Who
would all go there? Oh, George Crosby, John Brock, Fred Brock, everybody went. We learned to Fox Patton, we learned to waltz. And then when we got to be young teenagers, everybody would take turns having people in at their house on Friday night, and we would dance to the telephone records. Murray Howarth opened a barber shop right down by the public school, the consolidated school, and we all went there and had our hair cut. I can remember going there. He cut girls' hair and boys' hair and men's. Anybody could get their hair cut there. And I can't remember. I think it was 25 cents. I'm not too sure, but I think that's what it was. And to get back to the school days, everybody in Rossay knew the grade one teacher, who was Miss McMurray, who was the dearest lady. She had infinite patience. I don't think I ever heard her lose her patience with anyone. And we all had to go to school. We had to have a slate when we went to school. We would get a new slate when you went to grade one, and you could buy slate pencils that were two for 1 cent, just the plain slate. You could also, if you were very affluent, you could buy a slate pencil that was enclosed in wood, like a lead pencil is today, but those cost 5 cents, you know. It was much more practical to use than the ordinary slate pencils. And Miss McMurray would use one side of our slate for number work, which was what we called arithmetic, and the other side of the slate was used for printing. And she drew lines on that slate so that we would print our letters perfectly between the lines, and everybody that would bring her their new slate, and she had a pair of scissors that had one end of one of the blades was broken off, and she would take that broken blade and a ruler and line that slate, scratch those lines right on that slate. They were perfect. But I can still hear that pair of scissors going over that slate to make the lines. And she taught us the sounds of letters, which now they call, in the United States they call them phonics. I think the right word is phonetics, but we just called it sounding. And she had big cards up on the edge of the blackboard with pictures to illustrate each sound. The sound for G was B, and there was a picture of a frog. I remember that. And in those days, the power lines, the electric wires, made kind of a humming noise. If you were standing close to them, you could hear them hum. And so the letter M was represented by a power pole with wires going back, because that was M. And we would have, she would get us to bring an empty egg shell if we had a hard-boiled egg. And we, for breakfast, we would bring her the shell, and she would fill it with earth and put a seed in it of something, a bean maybe, and we would watch that grow. And she had all kinds of interesting things for us to do. Well, the people that we walked to school, because we lived within walking distance, but a lot of the children in that school came in vans, and they came, there was a van that came from East River, Renfrew, East Riverside. There was a van that came from down La Pointe, Fairville. And there was another van that came from Meenan's Cove. In fact, I think there was one from Fairville and one from Grand La Pointe, if I remember. There were four vans. And they were horse-drawn and with sleighs, with runners on them in the wintertime. And they were filled with straw on the floor and just sort of benches that the kids sat in. Dark. They were just really primitive when you look back on it. And those kids would have to, I'm sure they got in those vans at 7:30 because it took so long to get to school. Well, then in the, when there was no snow on the ground in the spring and in the fall, they had big vans with wheels on them, like wagons, big wagons that the kids went to school in. And they, of course, brought their lunch. And a lot of them were very, very poor. And I can remember seeing a boy having his lunch, and it was a chunk of bread, not even a slice of bread, but just a big hunk of bread. And that's all he had for his lunch. But the domestic science students, pupils as they call them, would make cocoa. And everybody had their own cup, and they would bring the cocoa around in these great big kettles, and the kids would have cocoa. And I know this one person that I remember so distinctly. He had a big chunk of bread and a cup of cocoa, and that was his lunch. And he was at school all day, and it would be, I'm sure it must have been 5 o'clock before he got home. And there were a lot of kids like that. Came from very, very poor homes. There was no welfare in those days. I don't know how some of these people managed to exist. I don't know how they kept warm in their houses. But the van drivers, of course, those sat around in the there was these huge sheds where they kept the vans and they stabled the horses while kids were in school. And we used to, at recess, we used to play around the van sheds. And after school, as I said, we went skating on the rink, and sometimes we went skating on the river. And as the boys got older, they would had ice boats, and there was a lot of ice boating on the river. And then in the summertime, some of the boys had sailboats, and we would go out on the river sailing. And as far as I know, our parents never worried about it. I'm sure my mother never worried about us, but it's a wonder we weren't drowned, you know, the things that we did. I can remember being out on somebody's boat, and another sailboat came alongside, and George McAvity straddled, had 1 foot on one deck and 1 foot on the other, and of course the boys that were at the tiller looked at each other and steered the boats away, so George fell right down in between the two boats. Well, of course he was rescued. But he could easily not have been rescued, you know. It'd have been very rough. Then I went as far as grade 5 to the public school, and then I went to Netherwood. And we only went to school from 9 o'clock in the morning until 1.
You were a day girl.
I was a day girl, yeah. And so that left all afternoon, but it took me 5 hours to do my homework. And so we didn't always go out in the afternoon, but I had a friend, Betty Mortimer, whose mother used to get English magazines, and some friend of hers in England would send her a bunch of English magazines like The Sketch and The Tatler and everything. They were sort of society magazines, and Betty would announce that Mother has a new batch of English magazines, and we would congregate up in her house and pore over these English magazines, and you think we knew all these people intimately because we followed their careers for several years. But even today, I can tell you some of the English girls that were debutantes in those days who now are...
Like a pet
pop. Yes, are either famous or infamous people in the world. And then, of course, RCS always had a dance in June, the June dance, it was known as. And, it was for the whole school. It wasn't just for the graduates. Everybody went. And you had a dance card, and you had to dance the first dance with the boy that took you to the dance. The first dance and the supper dance and the last dance. Those were the three dances. You had to dance with the person that brought you. You can dance others if you wanted. But there was a lot of changing of partners, and different ones would ask you to dance, and you would mark it down on your card if you had the fourth dance or the fifth dance or whatever. And then they would have a Paul Jones every once in a while, which meant that the girls walked around in a circle one way and the boys walked around the circle the other way and to the music, and then when the music stopped, you danced with the person that you were standing opposite. And sometimes that was great, sometimes it wasn't so great. Well, Miss Ganong was the headmistress at Netherwood when I went there, and Miss Ganong was very strict, but she was also, looking back on it, she was very ahead of her time as far as education was concerned. She was a graduate of Smith College in the United States, and she graduated in science, which was a little bit unusual for women in those days. And her associate at the school was Miss Stoddard, who was very Scottish, from Aberdeen, and we used to make fun of poor Miss Stoddard. She had buck teeth and a very strong Scottish accent, but boy, could she teach English. I really learned an awful lot from her. And we were very strong on the literature and the art subjects. I didn't never took physics. I had a smattering of chemistry from Miss Ganong, and we never got as far as calculus or anything like that, but Latin and French we had from the equivalent of grade 6. I mean, as soon as the first year I went to Netherwood, we had Latin and French, and learned a lot, and I liked Latin. I enjoyed it very much, and it's great now doing crossword puzzles. Latin comes in very handy. We were not allowed, we didn't really associate with the boarders at all. Sometimes we were allowed to come back to the school if they had concerts in the evening or something like that, but we didn't associate with them in the afternoons at all. We were rather taboo. So we were kind of on our own in the afternoons to make do our own thing, and we used to ski in the winter, and ski and skate, and there was terrific bus service then. You know, you could go to town, buses ran about every hour and a half, and not a lot of people had cars in those days, and so you could go to town, you could go to a movie. I remember when we were younger, my father used to work Saturday mornings, and he'd go to town, and we'd go to town with him and go to a movie for 10 cents. And then when it was over, we would go down to his office and come home with him. And I can remember going to the Imperial Theater to see that movie, The Champ, with Wallace Beery and Jackie Coogan, and crying my eyes out. And my brother Fern was so embarrassed in discussing with me. He kept saying, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. The blacksmith shop was always a fascinating place, I think, for all children. And I used to hang around there too and watch Mr. Kirsted shoe horses. And as I remember, he always had wore a leather apron. And my first time that I realized that there was such a thing as a depression, I really didn't know about it, but I can remember my mother being terribly, terribly upset, which was in 1929. My father had been a stockbroker, and of course everything went crash, and so he had no job, and so Mother was very resourceful, and she was a terrific cook, and she used to cater and make cakes for people, and we had our own chickens, so we had lots of eggs, so they were the very best of indeed.